The following is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 29, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on January 13, 2002, in Mumbai, India.
Maitreya uvacha
Mathu
sapatnya vagmanayar Ridhi vidhastu tansmaran Naichan mukti pathir muktim Tasma tapam upeyevan. Maitreya answered, Dhruva Maharaja's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly aggrieved. And thus, when he fixed his mind upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from this material world. But at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This important verse has been discussed by many stalwart commentators. Why was Dhruva Maharaj not very pleased, even after achieving the goal of life he desired? A pure devotee is always free from any kind of material desires. In the material world, one's material desires are almost demoniac. One thinks of others as one's enemies. One thinks of revenge against one's enemies. One aspires to become the topmost leader or topmost person in this material world. And thus one competes with all others. This has been described in the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, as asura. A pure devotee has no demand from the Lord. His only concern is to serve the Lord sincerely and seriously, and he is not at all concerned about what will happen in the future. In the Mukunda Mala Stotra, King Kulashekar, author of the book, states in his prayer, My dear Lord, I do not want any position of sense gratification within this material world. I simply want to engage in your service perpetually. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya in his Shikshastakam also prayed, My Lord, I do not want any amount of wealth. I do not want any number of materialistic followers. Nor do I want any attractive wife to enjoy. The only thing I want is that I may engage life after life in your service. Lord Chaitanya did not pray even for mukti or liberation. In this verse, Maitreya replied to Vidura that Dhruva Maharaj, influenced by a revengeful attitude towards his insulting stepmother, did not think of mukti, nor did he even know what mukti was. Therefore, he failed to aim for mukti as his goal in life. But a pure devotee also does not want liberation. He is a soul completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, and he does not demand anything from the Lord. This position was realized by Dhruva Maharaj when he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead present personally before him, because he was elevated to the Vasudeva platform. The Vasudev platform refers to the stage at which material contamination is conspicuous by absence only. Or in other words, where there is no question of the material modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And one can therefore see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because on the Vasudev platform, one can see God face to face. The Lord is also called Vasudev. Dhruva Maharaj's demand was for a position so exalted that it was never enjoyed even by Lord Brahma, his great-grandfather. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so affectionate and kind toward his devotee, especially to a devotee like Dhruva Maharaj, who went to render devotional service in the forest alone at the age of only 5 years, that although the motive might be impure, the Lord does not consider the motive. He is concerned with the service. But if a devotee has a particular motive, the Lord directly or indirectly knows it, and therefore he does not leave the devotee's material desires unfulfilled. These are some of the special favors by the Lord to a devotee. Dhruva Maharaj was offered Dhruva Loka, a planet that was never resided upon by any conditioned soul. Even Brahma, although the topmost living creature within this universe, was not allowed to enter the Dhruva Loka. Whenever there is a crisis within this universe, the demigods go to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kshirodakshai Vishnu, and they stand on the beach of the milk ocean. So the fulfillment of Dhruva Maharaj's demand, a position more exalted than that even of his great-grandfather Brahma, was offered to him. Here in this verse, the word the Lord is described as Muktipati, which means one under whose lotus feet there are all kinds of mukti. There are 5 kinds of mukti: Sayujya, Sarupya, Salokya, Samipya, and Sarasti. Out of these 5 muktis, which can be achieved by any person engaged in devotional service to the Lord, the one which is known as Sayujya is generally demanded by Mayavadi philosophers. They demand to become one with the impersonal Brahman effulgence of the Lord. In the opinion of many scholars, this Sayujya Mukti, although counted among the 5 kinds of Mukti, is not actually Mukti, because from Sayujya Mukti, one may again fall down to this material world. This information we have from Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein it is said, Patyantyadha, which means they again fall down. The monistic philosopher, after executing severe austerity, merges into the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, but the living entity always wants reciprocation in loving affairs. Therefore, although the monist philosopher is elevated to the status of being one with the effulgence of the Lord, because there is no facility for associating with the Lord and rendering service to him, he again falls into the material world, and his service propensity is satisfied by materialistic welfare activities like humanitarianism, altruism, and philanthropy. There are many instances of such fall downs, even for great sannyasis in the Mayavad school. Therefore, Vaishnava philosophers do not accept Sayujya Mukti to be within the category of Mukti. According to them, Mukti means transferal to the loving service of the Lord from one's position of serving Maya. Lord Chaitanya also says in this connection that the constitutional position of a living entity is to render service to the Lord. That is real mukti. When one is situated in his original position, giving up artificial positions, he is called mukta, or liberated. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is confirmed. Anyone who engages in rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord is considered a mukta or Brahma Bhuta. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee is considered to be on the Brahma Bhuta platform when he has no material contamination. In the Padma Purana, this is also confirmed. Mukti means engagement in the service of the Lord. The great sage Maitreya explained that Dhruva Maharaj did not desire in the beginning to engage in the service of the Lord, but he wanted an exalted position better than his grandfathers and great-grandfathers. This is more or less not service to the Lord, but service to the senses. Even if one gets the position of Brahma, the most exalted position in this material world, he is a conditioned soul. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati says that if one is elevated to real, pure devotional service, he considers even great demigods like Brahma and Indra to be on an equal level with an insignificant insect. The reason is that an insignificant insect has a desire for sense gratification, and even a great personality like Lord Brahma also wants to dominate this material nature. Sense gratification means domination over material nature. The whole competition between conditioned souls is based upon domination of this material nature. Modern scientists are proud of their knowledge because they are discovering new methods to dominate the laws of material nature. They think that this is the advancement of human civilization. The more they can dominate the material laws, the more advanced they think they are. Dhruva Maharaj's propensity in the beginning was like that. He wanted to dominate this material world in a greater position than Lord Brahma. Therefore, elsewhere it is described that after the appearance of the Lord, when Dhruva Maharaj thought and compared his determination to his final reward, he realized that he had wanted a few particles of broken glass, but instead received many diamonds. As soon as he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, he immediately became conscious of the unimportance of his demand from the Lord to have an exalted position better than Lord Brahma's. When Dhruva Maharaj became situated on the Vasudev platform due to seeing the Lord face to face, all his material contamination was cleared. Thus, he became ashamed of what his demands were and what he had achieved. He was very much ashamed to think that although he had gone to Madhuban, giving up the kingdom of his father, and he had gotten a spiritual master like Narada Muni, he was still thinking of revenge against his stepmother and wanted to occupy an exalted post within this material world. These were the causes for his moroseness. Even after he received all the desired benedictions from the Lord. When Dhruva Maharaj factually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there was no question of a revengeful attitude toward his stepmother, nor any aspiration to lord it over material nature. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind that he knew that Dhruva Maharaj wanted these. Speaking before Dhruva Maharaj, he used the word Vedaham, because when Dhruva Maharaj demanded material benefits, the Lord was present within his heart and so knew everything. The Lord always knows everything a man is thinking. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita also. Vedaham samatitani. The Lord fulfilled all Dhruva Maharaj's desires. His revengeful attitude toward his stepmother and stepbrother was satisfied, His desire for a more exalted position than that of his great-grandfather was also fulfilled, and at the same time, his eternal position in Dhruvaloka was fixed. Although Dhruva Maharaj's achievement of an eternal planet was not conceived of by him, Krishna thought, what will Dhruva do with an exalted position within this material world? Therefore, he gave Dhruva Maharaj the opportunity to rule this material world for 36,000 years with unchangeable senses and the chance to perform many great sacrifices and thus become the most reputed king within this material world. And after finishing with all material enjoyment, Dhruva Maharaj would be promoted to the spiritual world, which includes Dhruvaloka. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has described the Srimad Bhagavatam as Amalam Puranam, the spotless Purana. Vedavyas describes Nigamakalpataroagalitam Balam Sukamukaram Ritadravasam Yatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the very cream, the essence of all Vedic literatures. Dharma Projita Kaitra Patra Paramandiramat Saranam Satam. Because it does not consider the validity of any cheating religions, any spiritual system that is aimed at satisfying the conditioned selfish desires of the mind and the senses. Srimad Bhagavatam deals exclusively with unalloyed devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the very personification of Srimad Bhagavatam. When he was living in Puri, he would each day go to the Tota Gopinath temple to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is Srimati Radharani in Lord Chaitanya's Leela. Essentially, Srimad Bhagavatam reveals to the world the super excellent position of Srimati Radharani as the ultimate personification of pure love, from whom all love emanates, and how Krishna is eternally conquered by that love. So when Gadadhar Pandit is reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, it is flowing like unlimited torrents of nectar. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would become so enraptured in ecstasy when he would hear this story of Dhruva Maharaj. He would request Gadadhar to repeat it 100 times before going on to the next story. Because Lord Gauranga, it's Krishna himself tasting the sweetness of the pure love of Sri Radha, he could understand the purity of the devotion of this 5-year-old child. In this particular verse, the profound, unparalleled nature of Srimad Bhagavatam is revealed. Throughout the world, in all the various spiritual systems and religions, people generally approach God because they want material benedictions, or they want liberation from material suffering. Very, very rare to find one who has no selfish motivations whatsoever, simply wants to serve. Dhruva Maharaj, he approached the Lord with a very severe material infliction within his heart. He was insulted by his stepmother, and he wanted revenge. He was only 5 years old, but as a Kshatriya, he had that very, very deep determination within his heart. So he was worshiping the Lord in the forest with the guidance of his mother and the instruction of his Guru Maharaj. with this desire initially in his heart. I want to get revenge on my stepmother. I want to show her who I am. I can't sit on the seat of my father. I want not only my father's throne, but I want a greater throne than my grandfather or great-grandfather Brahma. So there is certainly intensified false ego involved in his revengeful attitude. But because he submitted to the words of his spiritual master, Narada Muni, and followed the process of devotional service wholeheartedly, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, meditating on the form of the Lord, worshiping the Lord, performing austerities so that his entire mind, senses, and words could be completely fixed on the Lord, he became so pure that he completely forgot all of these desires. He did not approach the Lord for mukti. He did not approach the Lord for devotional service. He approached the Lord for material domination and revenge. But he was purified through the process of devotional service. And here we find the Lord, he knew Dhruva Maharaja's desires. He fulfilled all his desires, his beginning desires and his end desires. At the end, he only wanted to render service to the Lord as the servant of the servant of his servants in pure love. He wanted nothing else. He was given that. He was given prema bhakti. He was given darshan of the Supreme Personality, face to face. He was touched by the hand of the Lord. In only 5 months, 5-year-old child, he was given the power to recite beautiful, eternal prayers of glorification. He was a Paramhamsa. But the Lord also recognized that at the very beginning of his devotional service, he wanted revenge. He wanted domination over the not only this material world, but over the universe. So the Lord gave him that too. This is what you want? You can have it. This is a mystery. Srila Prabhupada explains, Yasyaham anagrinami harisheta tanam shanai. That when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is compassionate to his devotee, he gives him what he wants. But when he gives him the greatest installation of his compassion, he takes everything away. So the devotee, his wealth, his family, his reputation, his health, everything is taken away, so he has nothing else to turn to except Krishna. And with a humble state of mind, he cries out the names of Krishna. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shribir Edamana Madapuma Naibar Hakyavidatum Vaitvam Akinchana Gocharam. Kunti says that one who has too much affiliation and attachment to material wealth, physical beauty, fame, high birth, education, one becomes proud of those things. Then one cannot feelingly cry out the name of God. Therefore, my Lord, you are a Kinchana Gocharam. You are the property of those who feel within their heart impoverished. So why Dhruva Maharaj was given such incredible material benedictions if he was so dear to the Lord? It's interesting. Because the Lord showed his great compassion to Dhruva Maharaj. In the beginning, he took everything away. If you take the honor away from a Kshatriya, he has nothing else. Today, there are not many real Kshatriyas in this world. But in days of actual Vedic civilization, a Kshatriya would live and die for his honor. Krishna told Arjuna in Gita, for a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. literally. A Kshatriya would be very happy to die in the battlefield if he was honored for that. But he could not tolerate living if he was dishonored. And we see sometimes Krishna punished people by not killing them, by dishonoring them, which was really torturous. Just like Ashwatthama. Instead of killing him, he dishonored him. Or Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini. He wanted to kill Krishna. He wanted to attack Krishna. He was blaspheming Krishna. Krishna could have killed him, but he saw that Rukmini didn't want his brother killed. So he gave him a certain type of adjustment in cutting his hairs and his mustaches, and he made him look like a foolish idiot. That was worse than death for him. He began to fast. He decided to give up his life. He couldn't bear living because he was dishonored. Even Jarasandha, he attacked Krishna. He was defeated. He was dishonored. He decided to commit suicide. But then the other demon said, no, you keep going, keep going. So he just kept attacking, attacking, attacking. He just couldn't stop. He had to get that honor back. So Dhruva Maharaj was dishonored. In this way, Krishna actually took everything away from him. He took his whole position away from him as far as the heir of his father. And within the heart, he left everything. He went into the jungle. He took vanaprastha at 5 years old. Hare Krishna. But because he surrendered to Krishna wholeheartedly, he became purified. And then Krishna wanted to give him the whole world to rule over because he knew Dhruva Maharaj was spiritually responsible enough to actually perform this service without being disturbed. If you give too much power, too much influence, too many good qualities to a person who is spiritually immature, it ruins them. Because they start identifying themselves with their role rather than with the spirit of the service attitude in which they're supposed to perform that role. The eternal position of every living entity is servant of the servant of the servant. Whoever we may be, whatever position, whatever powers and influence, we're just the servant of the servant of the servant. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like the straw in the street, to be tolerant like a tree, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. This is how devotees are everlastingly chanting the holy names. This is the continuity of a Vaishnava, is they maintain this consciousness at all times. However, if a person is not very advanced, not very realized, then they begin to identify with the particular role that they are put in this material condition, whether it's varna ashram or whether it's within the various conditions of society of today. If a person who is a Brahmin is proud, then he's not a Vaishnava. If a person of king thinks, I am the master, I am the ruler, then he's not really a Vaishnava. So in this world, there is a saying that even the pauper is proud of his penny. Even in the streets of Bombay, the beggars, if they sleep on a little burlap bag, this is mine. I'm proud of this bag. Everyone, it's just that the false ego just has such an untiring thirst to be proud of something. And the other side of the ego is when you're despondent, you're depressed, and you feel dejected when you don't have what you want, when you don't have what others have. You become envious. Envy is the basic principle of material existence. Our envy to God manifests in so many forms in this world. I want to be more beautiful. I want to be more handsome. I want to be more wealthy. I want to be more intellectual. I want to come from a higher society. I want more influence over others. These are all the roles of God, but we want them for ourselves. And as soon as we get them, we become infatuated. Great disease. For a Vaishnava, when he sees two small children, little tiny children, and one dominates over the other, and he thinks, oh, I'm so great. The parents just think, what a foolish child this is. But that's the whole way human society is. So it's very dangerous to have material opulences, because we become infatuated. We think, this is me, this is mine. According to the Rishabdev, the two basic principles for all material suffering and bondage is the misconceptions that I am this body and those things in relationship to this body are mine. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. So therefore, out of compassion, Krishna often takes away the opulences of a devotee, so that the devotee actually becomes humble and cries out for Krishna helplessly. Unless you can cry out for Krishna helplessly, you cannot find Krishna in your life. Krishna reciprocates with how you call out his name. If you have pride, if you think you're very great, if you think you're independent and self-sufficient, then you can't cry out the name of Krishna. You may make a show of chanting the name of Krishna, or you may ritualistically chant the name of Krishna. But real bhakti is to cry out helplessly. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was crying out helplessly, but for the wrong purpose. But because Narada Muni was praying for him and he gave him the proper process, gradually his motive became Krishnaized. And when he became actually pure, when he was spiritually strong, then Krishna understood, I could give him rulership of the entire world for 36,000 years and he will not be infatuated. He will not be intoxicated. He will simply see himself as the humble, obedient servant of the servant of the servant of myself and all living beings, and he'll rule in that spirit. That is bhakti. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Brahman, sannyasi. Naham viprona cha narapatir napi vaishyana shudra. I'm not Brahman chachya vaishya shudra. I'm not brahmachari grihastha vanaprastha sannyas. Gopi bhartur padakamala yoradas dasanudasan. I simply want to be the servant of the servant of the servant. This is a Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada is an example of this. When he was in his Grihastha Ashram Leela, at a certain point, his whole business just kind of fell apart. Yes, Shamsundar? And he writes that he laughed. The illusion, like foaming bubbles in this ocean, all these material things. He tried his best to be responsible and maintain family and everything else, but somehow or other, when everything was falling apart, instead of being depressed and angry, he just chanted the sloka, Yasyaham anugrinnami harishyatatanam shanai, that Krishna's giving me special mercy. He's taking everything away. And when he went to Vrindavan, some of the Brijabasis and some of his old friends and the Goswamis and God brothers, they explained, he was so poor when he took Vanaprastha. He was so poor. He didn't have anything. He gave everything he had to his family, because they were more or less grown up. He gave everything he had to them, maintained themselves nicely. They were stable, but he took nothing with him himself. Nothing. So simple. Some of his old friends say when they would come to their mat, he had kind of torn up clothing. He never complained. He was always happy, always ecstatic, that I'm going to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. It's my Guru Maharaj's mission. But he had nothing and no one. Somehow he got those little rooms in Radha Damodar temple. When he came to Bombay, begging, not for himself, he was begging for all living entities within the world. He was begging to give the chance for every living entity to go back to Godhead. That's what he was begging for. Nothing for himself. And Anjala Dutta, such a simple life. Cargo ship. Now even the most simple Indians, if they want to go abroad, they go on 747 jumbo jet airplanes. Yes? Somehow or other they manage. But it was cargo ship. How many people go on cargo ships? Then he lived in such a poor neighborhood of New York. He had nothing. He had the treasure of love of God he wanted to distribute to the world. He left Bombay as a beggar for a simple ticket on a cargo ship. And when he returned, he was telling the people of Bombay that in his society now there's about 100 temples and the expenditures are about 30 lakhs a day. People were shocked. They were struck with wonder. Yes, Shyamasundara Prabhu? Why is that? But he remained the same. He didn't change. He was simply the servant of the servant of the servant, simply trying to serve his Guru Maharaj. He was like a lotus flower, a lotus leaf. Even if it's in a muddy place, nothing can stick to the leaf. It always remains clean and pure because he actually had developed real love for Krishna. A few years after, he's taking jet airplanes around the world 12 times. Sometimes he's being picked up in Rolls-Royce, Cadillacs, Mercedes-Benz. Previously, he was walking alone with the umbrella. Some places he went, there were beautiful facilities for him. Printing presses. Previously, he just had a little typewriter. He would have to take train to Delhi. Now he had the best presses of Japan making mass copies of his literatures. Haribo. But he was the same. He was simply the servant of the servant of the servant, doing God's will with no ego, with no desire for anything for himself, just wanting to serve. Therefore, Krishna gave him so much of everything. So in the same way, Krishna gave Dhruva Maharaj such incredible opulences, even unknown to Lord Brahma. Dhruvaloka is a spiritual planet. Lord Brahma was never allowed to go there. But Dhruva Maharaj got to be the ruler of Dhruvaloka. In fact, it was named, a spiritual planet was named after him. That's great prestige. Dhruvaloka is higher than Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka is a material planet in this mundane world. And we talk about Brahmaloka as being the highest thing. But Dhruvaloka is Vaikuntha in this material world. It's a spiritual planet. Named after him. Such incredible benediction. He received the best of both worlds. And he used it all in Krishna's service. But even after receiving this benediction, he felt unhappy and ashamed. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. In any other Purana, in any other religious literature, in any of the religions of the world, he would have been overwhelmingly joyful that he received the best of both worlds. But he was ashamed. That why did I in my heart desire anything material? Why I had selfish desires? And the Lord is so merciful. Look at what he has done. Even these egoistic, selfish, revengeful desires that I had in the heart at the beginning of my spiritual life, the Lord fulfilled them all. How shameful. The Lord is so merciful, but how shameful am I? This shame is a symptom of ecstatic love. In the material sense, when we become ashamed, it's another quality of our false ego. That's why we're ashamed. Our depression, our elation, they are all different manifestations of our ego. But this shame was a symptom of ecstasy, was a symptom of love. It was a sign of the purity of his heart and his motives. Srila Prabhupada here explains a profound statement in this purport. He says, it is not the motive, but it is the service rendered that the Lord was attracted to. Because through the service, the motive changes. He actually carried out the order of his spiritual master Narada Muni wholeheartedly. That is the power of devotional service. Of course, when we understand bhakti deeper, we understand that really, for a sincere devotee, the service and the motive become one. Service means to please the object of our service, and the motive should be to please the object of our service. But at the beginning stages, any type of motive you may have, if you simply try to do some service with some sincerity, then Krishna reciprocates and purifies your motive. He purifies your heart. Sometimes people, they question, have I made any advancement since I've come to Krishna consciousness? I still have a lust and envy and anger and pride and greed in my heart. In fact, it seems more now than ever before. Is there any advancement? The fact that you're thinking that way means you've made great advancement. Because factually, before becoming a devotee, you were happy with your lust and envy and anger and greed and pride. They were the jewels that ornamented your existence. But now you're thinking these things are very, very contaminating. I want to become pure. I really want to be a selfless servant. That means your motives have greatly changed through the process of service and the association of devotee. That is glorious. So Dhruva Maharaj, in his shame, he is exhibiting the true substance of a great Vaishnava. But because he's such a great Vaishnava, even though he was ashamed that he wanted material prosperity and power, and he was ashamed that Krishna gave it to him, because he was actually sincere, because he was a pure soul, he accepted the position for the pleasure of the Lord. If Dhruva Maharaj would have said to the Lord, I'm ashamed of what I've asked you, and I'm ashamed that you've given it to me, therefore I reject it. I'm going to stay here in this Madhuban forest and I'm going to be a sannyasi. That would have been a deficiency in his devotion. His concern was simply in whatever way I could best serve. Even though it was a shameful position by his own calculation, he accepted it because it was the Lord's desire. Actually, a real devotee hates to be glorified, what to speak as king of the world for 36,000 years. But if it's the Lord's desire, he's willing to accept that service. It's an austerity. This is pure Vaishnav behavior. Na danam na janam na sundarim kapitam vaja katisha kamage mama janmani janmanishwari bhavatar bhaktirohaiti. The Lord prayed, I do not want wealth or beautiful women, fame, followers, influence over others. I do not even want liberation. I simply want to serve you birth after birth after birth. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this beautiful purport that the real essence of mukti is pure devotional service. The impersonalist philosophers, they consider mukti to be the extinguishing of all material conceptions, to merge into the impersonal existence of the Absolute. Well, there was no more pain. There was no more duality. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, one beautiful verse spoken by Brahma in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, he changed the word Muktipada to Bhaktipada. Because he said, I was striving for mukti my whole life, but after meeting you and understanding what is bhakti, the word mukti is abominable. I cannot tolerate it. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, you don't understand that real mukti is bhakti. The idea that the impersonalists have of mukti as being an impersonal emancipation is not the true understanding of mukti. It's a partial understanding. The full conception of mukti is pure unalloyed devotional service, entrance into the eternal lila of the Lord in the spiritual world. That is real mukti. Dhruva Maharaj did not want that. He wanted revenge. But by the grace of Narada Muni and by the grace of Krishna, his consciousness was transformed. This is the purpose of human life, transformation of heart. And this is the real essence of preaching. Srila Prabhupada explained, the purpose of preaching in this Krishna consciousness movement is not to conquer people with philosophical arguments, because that can also create all kinds of false ego. The real purpose of Krishna conscious preachers is to transform people's hearts by inducing them to sincerely chant the holy names. This is our parampara. Narada Muni has shown the process. Dhruva Maharaj, so much materially anguished. He was revengeful. He was hateful. He was aspiring for such material lusty desires. Narada Muni, so expert, engaged him in the process of devotional service in such a way to transform his heart, to make him into a pure devotee. That is parampara. Srila Prabhupada was such a bona fide representative of Narada Muni. Narada Muni bhajai vina Radhika Ramana name. Traveling around is giving love of God everywhere. So Srila Prabhupada did like that. Whatever way. Yes, Shamsundar Prabhu, he could speak for centuries about examples of how Prabhupada just took any type of person with any type of motive, and just by giving him proper association and direction, those people became transformed. Yes? What was that, the Avalon Ballroom? Is that where it was? That mantra rock dance? People were coming. They came to that rock dance that was arranged by Shamsundar Prabhu. Very controversial. At least at the time. The devotees in New York are thinking, what is just Shamsundar Prabhu and Mukunda Prabhu? What are they doing bringing Prabhupada to a place like this? Yes? Prabhupada's Paramhamsa. He's a pure saint from Vrindavan, coming to give pure devotional service. Shuddha Sattva in all of his mannerisms. And they just, how many people came? 5,000 hippies in this big ballroom. And they had the most passionate rock and roll musicians playing with just tumultuous speaker systems and loud drums and electrical guitars and organs and singing all about sex and drugs and liberation from morality. Wasn't that what they sang about in those days? Yes, and these were the main people influencing the whole generation's life. People like the Grateful Dead. Hare Krishna. We're grateful to be spiritually dead. And all, so they were all playing, just like, actually these rock concerts. If you don't, if you're just coming in from some foreign place, it sounds like World War II in the middle of a battlefield. It doesn't sound like music. Yes? Just drums going, and people screaming. They brought Prabhupada there. And then they had all these strobe lights, pitch dark. Not like these little strobe lights we have here in India for our dramas. These are high power hippie strobe lights. They just go, the light is just flashing in you. All of you're just blinded for a second, and then you're completely blinded for a second with darkness, and then the next second you're blinded with unbearable light. And your eyes are just becoming destroyed by this blinding experiences. And they were putting it on Prabhupada while he was singing. Yes? And all these people practically dressed like, I won't even try to describe how these people were dressed. If they were even dressed. And they're dancing, and they're not dancing like Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. They were crazy. Boys dancing with girls and girls dancing with boys, and how they dance and what they do when they're dancing is not to be discussed in a dignified assembly as today. So Prabhupada was there, and everybody went there just to have a good time and to get... They were passing out free LSD to all the attendants, yes? They were passing, not the devotees, but the people who were coming. Prabhupada's comment, this is no place for a brahmachari. But everyone who came there was coming there simply for sense gratification. But recently I was in Vrindavan and I met one devotee, and he told me he was in one of those rock and roll bands, and he was on LSD, and he was just playing for fame and fortune and everything else. But just by seeing Prabhupada and hearing Prabhupada chanting, he became so affected that the next morning he came to the temple, and a couple days later he was initiated. He's still chanting 16 rounds, and he has a sikha and neck beads, and he's a devotee. This is Narada Muni's lila. Transforming Magrari's heart, transforming Dhruva's heart, transforming Valmiki's heart, transforming Jagayan Madhai's heart. That is our parampara. That was Srila Prabhupada's lila. That is what preaching is about, transforming a person's heart. Not becoming famous, not becoming learned, not becoming influential over other people's lives. That's all materialistic. That will simply infatuate you and bring you down to the egoistic level of birth and death. Our motive and our purpose is simply to serve people in such a way that their hearts are transformed. Thank you very much. Shamsundar Prabhu, would you like to speak something else about that mantra rock dance that you arranged for Srila Prabhupada? But actually in doing that, it established Prabhupada's credibility in the entire America. People's hearts changed, their lives changed. And now it is your duty to speak something more about this.
I would say my heart changed also. I had not yet met Prabhupada. Prabhupada came in earlier that day and rested and went directly to the dance. Toward the end of the dance, like near to midnight, I had not yet even talked to him in any way. So seeing him sit down and take charge of this whole situation, the whole, like you were describing, the lights and the sound and the noise had reached gigantic proportions. And then suddenly the whole, as Prabhupada strode out onto the stage, the whole thing just slowly settled down and stopped. And there was absolute silence while I sat down. And Allen Ginsberg had introduced him and taught everyone the chant and made everyone repeat it. And then Prabhupada slowly started chanting with his own kartals. And that was all in the beginning. So we all stood transfixed watching this because it was so, there was so much contrast. It was such a dramatic change from what was going on 5 minutes before. And I remember at the time I was rather worried that the whole thing wouldn't come off because I was responsible for this whole show. I thought Prabhupada was just going to somehow blow it, you know, that everyone would leave. They would get so bored or something. But everyone stood transfixed listening to the mantra. And at first they started chanting back in a quiet manner, and Prabhupada kept kind of going like this, and they chanted louder and louder. And then one or two of the groups, that the bands that were there on the stage, began to play softly and then more loudly along with Prabhupada's and the chanting, to the point where then the other bands came out from behind the wings and brought their instruments, and eventually all the bands were on the stage with Prabhupada chanting, and the whole place turned back into a riot of color and sound again, but it was all chanting. And it went on for, God knows, well into the near the morning, probably at least an hour, till Prabhupada suddenly ended it, stood up and walked off. I recall he gave some sort of small talk also, but most of those words were lost. But that was my first exposure also to Prabhupada and the power of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shyam Sundar Prabhu ki jai. Thank you very much. Shyam Sundar Prabhu will be leaving us tomorrow. Let us express our deepest appreciation for his association by loudly chanting Hari.